because I'm gonna try to tell the story from their eyes, and the facts of the story will be true, and you can read about those in Matthew and Luke. I might take a little poetic license as I try to put a character to these people. Just a little, I don't know if this is to help you be anticipating next Sunday or to warn you. But next Sunday, we're going to be looking at the Christmas story from the viewpoint of the shepherds. And it's Children's Day, and so the message is going to be geared toward them. If you're an adult, we're going to invite you to listen in, but it's going to be geared to them. And we're going to be looking at it from the viewpoint of the shepherd. And I will be in character, and I will be dressed like a shepherd, okay? So I don't know if that excites you, if you go, oh, I'm skipping that one. If you want to skip that one, I am not dressing up at Maple Street. I'll just not be doing that over there, but just over here. But this week, we're going to be looking at the story of the Magi, and kind of for my creative side of this, you know, certainly using the stories that were written in the Bible for sure, but also leaning on a little bit on T.S. Eliot's poem, Journey of the Magi. I don't know if you know who T.S. Eliot is or not. He's my favorite poet. And T.S. Eliot was actually a contemporary of C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. As a matter of fact, the three of them were friends, and they met two times a week for tea in London. I would love to have been sitting at the table beside those. What was the conversation like between T.S. Eliot, J.R.R. Tolkien, and C.S. Lewis, all guys who were creative writers, all that really that loved the Lord? That must have been incredible. And so coming at it a little bit from that perspective there. So listen in here with me, and we'll move through this. Erasmus was a magi to Artaxerxes the 25th himself, one of many advisors that the emperor had on his staff to provide special insight into the decisions that the ruler had to make to govern the mighty Persian Empire. Because he understood that there needed to be some sort of a supernatural element that he could lean on, and if he made a poor decision that he could blame, that was kind of the way that the emperor operated. And Erasmus was one of the stargazing guild. He would search the heavens for insight to predict the future and give advice to the emperor himself. Most evenings would find him in the observatory until way after midnight, reading the stars and constellations and seeking wisdom from them so that he would know how to advise Artaxerxes in ruling the empire. Well, very early one morning, just an hour or two before dawn, he had only been in bed for a couple of hours, he was awakened by a servant who told him that he'd been summoned to the observatory immediately. And as Erasmus threw on his clothes, he realized something monumental had to be occurring for him to be summoned so, because that never happened. And frantically, he searched his mind and calculated in his head, were there any comets that were due? Was it possible that there was an eclipse coming that he had missed? And he knew that there wasn't. So he's wondering, what is happening that would lead to this summons? And as he rushed out of his home, he immediately stopped and halted in awe, because there in the sky, low in the sky, was a brand new star that he had never seen before. And to his trained eyes, the change in the sky was obvious. And his first thought was, where had that come from? Because he knew it hadn't been there just a few hours earlier when he had been at the observatory. Well, he ran all the way there. And the observatory was in an uproar. Every stargazer in the city was there. Yes, the star had appeared suddenly. It had actually just appeared about an hour before then. And everyone knew that a new star appeared for one of two reasons. It either appeared to symbolize the birth of a new great empire, or it manifested itself to symbolize the birth of a new great king. Well, most argued for the first. A great empire had been formed, and the Persian Empire was doomed. They were already trying to decide who would get the privilege to tell Artaxerxes, you know, not a healthy thing to do, to tell an emperor that his empire might be coming to an end. A mighty empire had formed. Erasmus wasn't so quick to agree, and it wasn't just because he liked his head attached to his neck. You see, they already knew of the Roman Empire that existed. How could another empire have conquered it so quickly? No, Erasmus argued the star must mean that a great king had been born. Well, they discussed the star for days. Artaxerxes was waiting for an answer. They had to make a decision. So finally they decided that the star must indeed mean the birth of a great king. At least they decided that for the maybe the reason was it was at least the safest thing to tell the emperor. Erasmus and two others were chosen to travel and to try to find this new king and to pay homage to him in the name of Artaxerxes. And the emperor would send gifts because they had convinced him that this king was going to be so great that he would be a much better friend than he would be an enemy. Should have seen their caravan when they left the city. 20 of the whitest Indian elephants that could be found, 100 servants, massive amounts of foods and supplies, everything from tents to gifts to the new king. They set out from the city in parade fashion. But it was a long journey. And that doesn't begin to describe their ordeal. They traveled through hostile lands. They were attacked, and they were attacked often by hostile people. A journey that they expected to last a couple of weeks stretched out much longer. Their supplies were exhausted and depleted. They had to abandon the elephants. They even had to sell most of the gifts that the emperor had sent. Finally, they arrived in the country of Judea, a small part of the Roman Empire, an insignificant place, really. It played no political point or purpose whatsoever in the Roman Empire. And they stopped at the palace of the king, expecting to find the new king there. But they discovered at the palace that a child actually hadn't been born in that palace for years. So they traveled on, and finally they came to a little village. As impossible as it seemed, this had to be the place. If for no other reason, there was nowhere else to search. So they began to ask about town. Could there have perhaps been a child who had been born on a certain night at a certain time? And there was only one, a boy. The son of all things, a carpenter. Well, they were invited into the humble home. The couple that lived there seemed surprised to see them, but not too surprised, considering the magnitude of the guests who had arrived. And they saw this new great king for the first time. He's a few months old, an ordinary enough looking child. In reality, surrounded by little more than poor people and a poor community and dirt. Who would blame them if they thought that the long journey that they had taken had been a waste of their time? But the reality is, they knew that the star had led them there. And so there must have been purpose behind them. You see, they believed that the stars could be trusted no matter what. And I think it's amazing that God used that belief to lead them to meet Jesus. They took out all that they had left from the emperor's gift, a small bag of gold, a large bundle of frankincense, and a canister of myrrh. And the young family was really grateful for the gifts. They received them solemnly. And I wonder today, did those magi understand just who they had seen in that village that day? Did they realize who they knelt before? Did they have any idea that they were worshiping the King of Kings and the Creator of all things? I doubt it. And did they come to understand that the star in the sky that led them to see Jesus that day didn't just symbolize the birth of a great king? It also symbolized that the kingdom of heaven had now come to earth. did they get that? We get a brief glimpse to an answer to that question in Matthew chapter 2, just a couple of verses. After they visited Herod at the palace, it says this, "Instructed by the king, they set off. Then the star appeared again, the same star they had seen in the eastern skies. It led them on until it hovered over the place of the child. They could hardly contain themselves. They were in the right place. They had arrived at the right time. They entered the house and saw the child in the arms of Mary, his mother." Now here's our key verse of the day. "Overcome, they kneeled and worshipped him. Then they opened their luggage and presented gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh." You know, that day those magi gave Jesus gifts that were fit for a king. Maybe they weren't the exact amounts that an earthly king would have received in gift, but they were gifts that were fitting for a king. And even today, you know, we give gifts at Christmas to loved ones, and it's really, in part, following the tradition of the Magi who brought those first gifts to Jesus that first Christmas 2,000 years ago. And if you're anything like me, you get way more excited about the gifts that you give than the gifts that you're going to receive, right? I mean, I don't know, maybe you're not. Maybe you're going, no, my spiritual gift is receiving gifts. I don't know, that could be maybe true of you, but I get way more excited about the gifts that I'm giving because I want to see the reaction. You know, I put thought into that. I'm like, man, I want them to be pleased. And when we think about the story of the Magi and their visit to Jesus, the first thing that we think about are the gifts that they brought Jesus, right? The gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh are central to the story of the Magi. That's the first thing that we think about. And the Magi worshipped Jesus through the gifts that they gave him. Here's the key thought of the day. Giving gifts to Jesus is one way that we can worship him. So for the rest of our time this morning, I want us to think about some Christmas gifts that we can give to Jesus this year. You spend any time thinking about that? What's a gift that you could bring? I mean, the Magi, they brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. What could you bring? I got a few things for us to consider here. Here's Christmas gift number one. Consider giving Jesus your gold. Now, as I say that, I don't expect you to, like, peel off your wedding ring and drop that in the offering plate, all right? Or, you know, think, oh, well, what can I liquefy to buy a bunch of gold? It goes way beyond that. It's a bigger concept than us thinking about, you know, literal gold. Here's your next blank. Giving Jesus your gold means to give Jesus something from your resources. You know, in Matthew chapter 25, Jesus tells a parable about a businessman who was going on a trip, and he placed part of his business in the control of three of his employees. One of them was entrusted with 5 bags of silver, one of them was entrusted with 2 bags of silver, and one of them with 1 bag of silver. And you know this story. The master went away, and when he returned, the employee with 5 bags had put his boss's money to work, and it had yielded 5 more bags. And the one with 2 bags did the same thing, and it had yielded a profit of 2 more bags. But the third one sat on the resources provided by his boss, and therefore didn't earn or yield anything at all. And Jesus wraps up this parable by saying this, "Then the servant with the 1 bag of silver came and said, 'Master, I knew you were a harsh man, harvesting crops that you didn't even plant and gathering crops you didn't cultivate. I was afraid I would lose your money, so I hid it in the earth. Look, here is your money back.' But the master replied, 'You wicked and lazy servant. If you knew I harvested crops I didn't plant and gathered crops I didn't cultivate, why didn't you deposit the money in the bank? At least I could have gotten some interest on it.'" Apparently you could get interest on savings accounts back in Jesus' day. "Then he ordered, 'Take the money from this servant and give it to the one with the 10 bags of silver. To those who use well what they are given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away.'" Here's the point for us to grab. God has given us resources. The things that we have available to us in our lives, not so that we can just enjoy them for ourselves, but so that we can use those to give back to Him. You see, this little story that Jesus told, it's really not just about money. It's about taking whatever God has given you and using it for Him and for His purposes and for His glory. Here are your next blanks. Resources can mean your money or even your time. How many of you would agree with me that your time is gold, right? We would say absolutely, because we're busy people and we have to prioritize what we're doing. Some of you helped buy some Thanksgiving meals a couple of weeks ago. That's giving back a gift to Jesus. Some of you helped assemble those things and deliver them. That's giving of your time. That's a way that you've given a gift back to Jesus. Can I tell you about another on-ramp? December 18th, that's a Wednesday night, 6:30 p.m. We're going to be gathering here, and we're going to be putting together gift baskets for people in our community who serve us. And so, I don't know, we're going to be doing 20 of these or something like that. And that's an honor. You could be part of that. You could come on Wednesday night at 6:30, and we're going to assemble those gift baskets. And then on Thursday, we need people who would be willing to take them and deliver them out in the community. And that's another way that you could be involved. But the simple little ways, maybe, that we can give gifts back to Jesus. And that's how we give our gold to Him. And this one's for all of us. It doesn't matter how old we are or how young we are, because it's not about the amount that we give or whether the time that we give is something that's huge. It's about the heart desire to give the gifts to Jesus in the first place, right? Do you remember the time that Jesus witnessed a rich person putting money in the offering and a poor widow woman putting money in the offering at the temple? Do you remember that? It's really interesting. And which gift impressed him, the large amount that the rich person put in the offering or the literal penny that the poor widow put in the offering? It was the widow that impressed him, right? I find that story so compelling because we know who Jesus is, right? The creator of the universe. The creator of the universe noticed a poor widow woman giving one penny at the temple. That ought to tell us volumes about who God is and how He notices what we do. And it was so compelling that He grabbed His followers, right, and pulled them aside. And He pointed it out to them. He wanted them to understand as well that it's not the amount that's given. It's the heart behind it. Kids here in the church, this one's for you kids, okay? Kids, listen up. I get it. You guys don't have a lot of money. I get that, you know? And you might think, well, how's it going to help if grandma gives me $20 for Christmas and I give $2 back to Jesus? What's that $2 going to accomplish? It's not a lot of money. And I'll be honest with you, it's not going to go a long way toward paying our electric bill here. You know, it's not going to. But here's the awesome, awesome thing. If you do that, you will get the attention of Jesus. He doesn't miss those things. He sees it when we do those things. And it doesn't matter how big or how small, when we do things in His honor with a pure heart behind it, He notices and He's pleased and He's blessed. And all of us can give Jesus some of our time. I remember a couple of years ago, we had a family in our church that was a larger family. They had five kids. They were all younger kids, like under the age of like eight. And our church was having a really big event. It was a Friday night, Saturday thing. It was concentrating on marriage. And they really wanted to go to this conference that our church was doing. But they didn't have a whole lot of money, and it was tough to get by. This happened to be kind of just like early in December leading up to Christmas, and right or wrong, you know, Christmas brings other financial pressures on us. And they realized they probably couldn't do it. They just couldn't afford it. They couldn't afford a babysitter. And a teenager in our church found that out. And so she goes to this family and she said, I want you to go to that conference. So I'll watch your kids for you Friday night and Saturday. And I don't want you to pay me anything. I just want to do it so that you can go to that conference. Can I tell you, that's giving Jesus some gold. That wasn't just a blessing to that family. Right? That was a blessing to him. So for all of us, this Christmas season, can we give Jesus some of our gold? Can we give something back to him that he's giving to us? And here's the deal on this one. It really ought to be something above and beyond what we normally give, right? I mean, because That's what the gift would really be, right? I mean, I'm going to be in trouble this Christmas if I say to my wife, hey, I'm not going to get you a Christmas gift this year because really the only gift you need is that you're married to me. Right? I mean, that's all you need. And then I better duck, you know, and probably run, right? I mean, that's you don't do that. You have your normal life. And so, you know, I want to give her a gift that says, I love you. I honor you. This is above and beyond normal. So what would that look like for you? Here's the next one. Gift number two. Consider giving Jesus your worship. Some of you that were working ahead in your notes, you wrote frankincense in there already, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Spelled it wrong too, probably. Do you know what frankincense is? Frankincense is an expensive incense that was used in temples. Frankincense was an essential oil in Jesus' day, right? It would be lit and it would be burned and it would provide this sweet fragrance in the temple, helping people enter into an attitude of worship. Here's the deal on this one. When you smelled the frankincense, you were about ready to enter into worship. Matthew 2:11 of the Magi. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. You know, during Jesus' life in Judah, worship and incense, it just went together. Listen to what God says about people when they disappointed him with this. It's found in Jeremiah 44, verse 4. It says, they provoked my anger with all their wickedness. They burned incense and worshiped other gods, gods that neither they nor you nor any of your ancestors had ever even known. Let's be super honest with each other on this one. It is easy for us at Christmas time to do what these folks did during Jeremiah's time. Here's what I mean. Christmas has become so commercialized in our society that it's easy to think selfishly rather than focusing on the real reason for Christmas, the gift of Jesus. You know what killed me during Christmas time? Car commercials. The car companies, right? Who buys their spouse a Lexus for Christmas? I mean, they got to have way more money than me, right, to be able to do that. Have you seen the one where the guy goes out and he buys his wife a GMC truck and he buys himself one too? I got myself one too. Those kill me. But that's the indicator of the commercialization of Christmas. Hey, Christmas is a good time to buy a brand new car for your spouse. And I'm not knocking you if you've done that. Big kudos. My wife deserves a Lexus. But you're not getting one, honey. And I wonder, how many times have I been guilty of burning my incense about other things instead of my worship of Jesus? So I was reflecting on this, I realized that I've had times in my life where I struggled to find time to go to church or to a Christmas Eve service because I was too busy with Christmas. How insane is that? Too busy with Christmas to do that. I think that's what God was talking about in Jeremiah chapter 44. You know, the Magi knew exactly what they were doing. They were bringing their worship to this newborn king. Here's your next blank. Could your gift to Jesus this season be a renewed passion to worship him in your life and to prioritize that this Christmas season? You know, worship of God, when you peel away all of the layers that we've surrounded it with, it's essentially making God the number one priority in our life. It's a conscious decision that involves our will and our heart and our intellect that leads us to the understanding that all that I am or all that I'm ever going to be is first and foremost a follower of Jesus. That's the first and foremost thing in my life. Apostle Paul tells us in Colossians 3, and whatever you do or say, do it as a representative of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. That is giving Jesus our worship, that in life, in everything that we do, in word and deed, we remember that we represent Christ, not just for ourselves, But we live like it so the world notices. This is just a dumb little illustration of that, but that's why this week when I left a store that I was at here in town and I got in my truck and I realized that I had got $2 more in change than I should have got, you know? And it was cold and it was windy and it would have been so easy to just sit there and go, oh, that's $2. And it was their mistake, right? But it's why I got out of the truck and I took the $2 back in, right? Because everything that we do is a representative of Jesus Christ. So we give Jesus gifts of gold from our resources, and we give him the gift of worship. And lastly, don't write in myrrh, consider giving Jesus your life. So what is myrrh? Listen to this. John chapter 19. Afterward, Joseph of Arimathea, who had been a secret disciple of Jesus because he feared the Jewish leaders, asked Pilate for permission to take down Jesus' body. When Pilate gave permission, Joseph came and took the body away. With him came Nicodemus, the man who had come to Jesus at night. Here's what I want you to grab. He brought about 75 pounds of perfume ointment made from myrrh and aloes. Following Jewish burial custom, they wrapped Jesus' body with the spices and long sheets of linen cloth. You know, myrrh was mostly used as an expensive spice that was used to embalm a body to prepare it for burial. And I think we can see the symbolism in that gift, right? That even at Jesus' birth, we find hints of his crucifixion and death. The wise men gave a gift that was valuable and part of Jewish life, their burial rituals. And I wonder, could you consider this Christmas season dying to your own hopes, dreams, futures, and embrace God's hopes, dreams, and future for your life? Could your Christmas present to Jesus this year be your very life? I believe there are two parts to this Christmas gift. The first one is this: give Jesus your life by seeking Jesus' forgiveness for your sins and choose to live for him. Maybe you're here today and you say, well, I don't think I've ever done that in my life. I've never really sought Jesus out in that way and to ask him to forgive me for my sins and to seek to believe in who he is and what he's done for me and to try to the best of my ability to live a life that would be pleasing to him. Maybe you've never done that before. Could I tell you that the greatest gift that you could give Jesus this Christmas season is taking that step of giving him your very life, saying, I'm choosing to believe in you. Forgive me. I'm choosing to follow you. If you haven't done that, could I encourage you to consider that? And you could just begin that process by offering a simple prayer. You could just say, Lord, I realize I've done so many things wrong in my life. Forgive me of those. I'm believing and trusting in you. Help me to live for you. If you do that, you've taken the first step of offering your very life to Jesus as a gift. Nothing would please him more. Romans 10:9 says, if you openly declare that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. What does saved mean? It means rescued from a broken life and given a restored life. It means rescued from the punishment that sin ultimately leads to being the gift of knowing and enjoying Jesus' relationship both now on planet Earth and forever someday in heaven. Here's the second part of that gift, maybe. Maybe you've done that in your life. Well, here's maybe a step you would consider. Sacrifice your desires by living first for Jesus and his purposes. Listen carefully here to what Hebrews 13, 15, and 16 say, because this is what I mean by this one. He says, let us offer through Jesus a continual sacrifice of praise to God, proclaiming our allegiance to his name. All right? So that's part of the sacrifice, that we are praising God. We're saying, I'm all in. I'm with you, Jesus. And then it goes on and it says, and don't forget to do good and to share with those in need. These are the sacrifices that please God. What pleases Him? When we live a life of sacrifice of praise, that Colossians 3 thing, right? In all that I do, in word or deed, it's for Jesus. And then when we do good and we do things to help others, the writer of Hebrews says, man, that's a sacrifice that God finds acceptable. That's a gift that we can give to God. Here's the bottom line. Christmas ought to remind us to give joyfully to Jesus. And here's the challenge. What will your gift to Jesus be this year? You know, I wrote in the bottom of your notes there this little sentence, Jesus, this Christmas season, I give you. What would you write in there? Maybe you know that right now. Maybe God has already revealed something. You go, I know what that is. I know what God wants me to do. Maybe you don't. Maybe you could just spend the next couple of days reflecting on that, meditating on it, making it part of your prayer life. Lord, I really want to give a gift back to you. What would you want me to give to you? Can I tell you, I drive my family kind of bonkers sometimes at Christmas season because the family does this, you know, the Christmas list thing, right? You know, these are the things I'd like for, and that's helpful because we want to know how to shop for each other. I'm terrible at getting the list out. Right? And part of that is, honestly, I'm like, I don't care if I get anything, you know, but they're always coming after me. Get the list. Can you get the list? We need to know what you want. Give us the list, right? And I wonder what it would look like if we came to Jesus that way. Lord, give me the list. What could I give you this Christmas time? What gift could I give that would be pleasing to you and honoring to you? And it would be a demonstration that, man, I'm all in my walk with you. What would that be? I'm going to pray here and invite the worship team to come up and lead us in our closing song. Lord, I thank you so much that you have given us the gift of gifts, the ultimate gift, the gift of Jesus. Thank you so much for that. And the reality is, it's not just one gift you've given us in Jesus. It's all the gifts that you've given us in Jesus. Forgiveness, grace, mercy, your presence in our life, the fact that no matter what circumstance or trial we're going to face in life, we know that you're with us, you're in us, you're walking that with us. The reality that you're changing us from the inside out and making us more like you. That you're giving us the fruits of the Spirit. That you're giving us gifts so that we can serve and make a difference. The list goes on and on. Thank you for the gifts given in Jesus. And over the next couple of weeks, as we think back on what could we give you, show us what's on the list. And may we be faithful. In Jesus' name, amen.